At the dawn of the age of information, it takes over 16 hours to transmit a message through the Atlantic. But it's the fastest message ever to pass from the UK to the US. Today, anyone on the globe with a phone in their pocket can communicate with almost anyone else on Earth in a matter of seconds. In the 1840s, the only way for people living in different parts of the world to send information was through letters or packages across sea and land. And even though the age of steam was rapidly replacing the age of sail, crossing the oceans is still very slow to this day. Back then, America's rapidly growing economic centers were cut off from London in the UK, the financial capital of the world. If either market had to send or receive information, the message could only travel by sea, which took a minimum of 10 days to cross the Atlantic. And because we know time is money, it was only a matter of time before entrepreneurs and investors on both sides of the ocean started making plans to wire the Atlantic Ocean with an underwater telegraph cable. Back in the late 1830s, the first commercial telegraph cables are in use over short distances on land. By the 1840s, people are talking about even planning to lay submarine telegraph cables to communicate more quickly and frequently with people across the water. In 1854, Cyrus Field invites Frederick Gisborne, a Canadian telegraph engineer, to visit him in New York. Field made his fortune supplying paper to the newspaper industry, but he knows the future of communication is under the sea, and Gisborne has government financing to lay a cable from Newfoundland to Nova Scotia and then into the United States. Gisborne says to Field, "Why stop in Newfoundland? Why not go all the way across the Atlantic and link Europe with the States?" The first step is to lay the overland cable from St. John's, the capital of Newfoundland, to Cape Ray on the west coast, on the edge of Cabot Strait, which takes a year to complete. In 1855, Gisborne sets out from Cape Ray across Cabot Strait in a steamship towing a barge which feeds out the cable. All is going well until a raging storm sets in. To save the barge, Gisborne has to cut the cable and loses the cable laid to that point. In 1856, Gisborne has a steamboat fitted out for a second attempt to lay the cable, and in the course of the year, he successfully lays a cable linking Cape Ray, Newfoundland, and Aspie Bay in Nova Scotia, at a cost of over $1 million. Field adopts Gisborne's scheme as the first step of the much bigger undertaking and starts to raise financing for the New York, Newfoundland and London Telegraph Company to establish a telegraph line between America and Europe. In 1855, Field makes his first of 56 crossings of the Atlantic Ocean to arrange the construction of the first transatlantic cable with John Watkins Brett. Brett is head of Brett's Submarine Telegraph Company. In 1850, Brett laid the first ever submarine cable across the English Channel, linking England with France. And in 1853, he laid down the deepest cable at the time, linking England and Ireland, with the deepest points approaching 140 meters. Having completed the first and the deepest, Brett is the world's leading authority on submersible ocean cables. But even his experience in depths of 140 meters doesn't compare to the depths of the Atlantic, which reaches over 3,000 meters in some areas. Field also has to meet with cable manufacturers and raise more money. The only commercial manufacturers of submarine cable are in Britain, and he didn't raise enough funds for the project in New York. After meeting with Brett, Field pushes ahead, and before forming a company to carry it out, he orders 2,500 nautical miles of cable from the Gutta Percha Company in London, more than enough to cover the roughly 1,800 nautical miles across the Atlantic. The cable is made up of 7 copper wires covered with 3 coats of gutta percha, which is a natural thermoplastic rubber that's easy to mold and shape. It's then covered and wound with a layer of tarred hemp and protected or armored by a sheath of 18 strands of iron wire rope. Each strand has 7 wires twisted in a helix. The cable is constructed by the Gutta Percha Company and then armored separately by wire rope manufacturers. With only 4 months to complete the order, 2 wire rope companies are contracted to armor the cable. Once complete, the cable weighs nearly 1.1 tons per nautical mile. It's relatively flexible and strong enough to withstand tension up to several tons of force. In October 1856, the Atlantic Telegraph Company is formed with Brett as president and Field as vice president. Field puts up a quarter of the capital, and the remaining shares are sold mostly to existing investors in Brett's company. Just before the two cables are delivered, the Gutta Percha Company finds a serious error. Each armored wire rope has been made with the wire strands twisted in different directions. The two halves of the cable can't be spliced together. If they do, the protective wire will unravel when it's put under tension while it's laid. The problem is solved quite quickly by splicing the cables through an improvised wooden bracket to hold the wires in place. But when the news leaks, there's a wave of negative publicity towards the project. To show their support, the British government gives Field a loan of £1,400, about £170,000 today, and they provide him with a vessel to lay the cable. Field asks the US government for help, and a bill is submitted to Congress for a subsidy. It passes by a single vote and signed by President Franklin Pierce, some say on his last day in office. And the US also provides a vessel. Two battleships are converted to lay the cables, HMS Agamemnon from the UK and USS Niagara from the US. It takes both ships to load the 2,500 nautical miles of cable. In the company, there's a debate about how to get started. Either the cable is laid from a beach in Ireland and spliced in the middle of the ocean, then the next ship continues the run. Or both ships sail to the middle of the Atlantic and splice the cable, then travel away from each other to the shores of Ireland and Newfoundland. Without any real-world examples of the best way to move forward, a decision is taken, and on the 5th of August 1857, the two ships set off from the white beaches near Ballycarby Castle in County Kerry on the southwest coast of Ireland. The cable is laid from one shore and will continue until it reaches the other. The cable breaks on the first day, but it's recovered using grappling irons, which are small, three-pronged anchors attached to a rope and dragged along the seafloor. It breaks a second time along Telegraph Plateau in waters nearly 3,200 meters deep, and the operation is cancelled for the rest of the year. 300 miles of cable is lost, but the team believe the 1,800 miles of cable they still have will be enough to complete the job. It breaks because of the tension when paying out the cable. As the weight of 3,000 meters of heavy cable hangs from the ship, it starts to run out quickly. The braking system on board takes a huge force to stop the cable from running out, and the sudden stop snaps the cable. A new braking mechanism is designed and successfully tested in the Bay of Biscay using Agamemnon in May of 1858. Today, modern cable tension systems look like two caterpillar tracks that grip the cable and control the speed of the cable being paid out by squeezing the cable tight between the tracks. Modern cable-laying ships will start at one shore of a country and sail through the ocean, much like the first attempt that failed. But with their new cable tensioner, both Agamemnon and Niagara set sail for the Atlantic to try again, this time starting in the middle of the Atlantic and sailing away from each other. 10 days into their voyage, a heavy storm nearly ends the second attempt. Both ships are overloaded and top-heavy with cables on deck. The two captains struggle to keep their ships from capsizing. The warships aren't designed to handle this type of weight distribution. 10 seamen are injured in the storm, and the electric cabin with all the equipment to splice the cables is flooded. But the storm clears and the two ships reach the midpoint of the Atlantic Ocean on the 25th of June. The crew splice the two ends of the cables together, and the two ships part ways. Agamemnon retraces its course east towards Valentia Island off the coast of Ireland, slowly and carefully paying out cable while Niagara heads west towards Newfoundland. The cable breaks after just 3 nautical miles. It breaks again after another 54 miles and a third time after about 200 miles have been paid out by each of the vessels. The second attempt is called off and the two vessels return to Queenstown in County Cork, Ireland. Several members of the board want to cancel the project and sell off the remaining cable, but Field persuades them to keep going. almost a year after their first attempt. Agamemnon and Niagara set sail once again on the 17th of July, and on the 29th of July, they reached their midpoint position in the Atlantic and spliced the cables. This time, the cable pays out smoothly from both ships with no breaks in the cable. On the 4th of August, Niagara drops anchor in Trinity Bay, Newfoundland, and the next morning, the cable is taken ashore. Agamemnon arrives in Valentia Bay on the 5th of August, and its end of the cable is taken ashore to Knightstown and connected to the cable house. The first ever transatlantic cable is successfully laid, uniting Europe and the United States. Beginning on the 10th of August 1858, test messages are sent from Newfoundland to Ireland. The first message is read in Valentia Bay on the 12th of August, and their reply to Newfoundland on the 13th. Over the next few days, more test and configuration messages are exchanged until the 16th of August, when the first official message is sent via the cable. Directors of Atlantic Telegraph Company Great Britain to directors in America, Europe and America are united by telegraph. Queen Victoria in England sends a 98-word message to President Buchanan in the US, which takes over 16 hours to transmit. Today, an email travels halfway around the world in less than 0.2 seconds, which is faster than the blink of an eye. Two key men are appointed to ensure the cable works to its full potential: self-taught chief electrician Wildman Whitehouse and respected scientist chief engineer William Thompson, and they don't see eye to eye. As a self-taught electrician, Whitehouse is interested in the transmission of electricity and repeatedly fires 2,000 volts through the cable, which erodes the wires and insulation. In September 1858, the cable fails and Whitehouse is fired. Although the cable is never made available for public use and never works as well as expected, there are a few useful messages sent. News of the collision between the Cunard Line ships Europa and Arabia is reported using the cable on the 17th of August. The British government uses the cable to stop an order for two regiments in Canada to sail to England, saving £50,000. A total of 732 messages were transmitted before the cable failed in under 2 months. Today, there are more than 100 billion messages sent on WhatsApp every day. In 1873, 74, 1880, and 1894, more cables were laid down between Ireland and Newfoundland. By the end of the century, British, French, German, and American-owned cables were laid, linking Europe and North America. And London evolved from the financial capital to the telecommunications capital of the world. It didn't take long for cables to form a live girdle around the world, known as the All Red Line. Today, it's hard to imagine a message taking 16 hours to reach the other side of the world. The capacity to move news and data quickly around vast distances has had a profound impact on politics, war, economics, and society. Submarine telegraph cables reduced communication time from post traveling weeks on ships to mere hours. A 2018 study published in the American Economic Review found that the transatlantic telegraph cable substantially increased trade across the Atlantic and reduced prices. The rate of communication over the submarine telegraph cables began with 8 words per minute and improved quickly to 17 words per minute. But at a cost of $5 a word, the average skilled worker would have to work 2 days to send 1 word across the Atlantic. Today, most of the developed world has access to unlimited data plans, and messages take milliseconds to reach their destination.